Opinions expressed on this program are those of the host and do not reflect those of KVOR, Cumulus Media, or its advertisers.
I'm American made, but life serving lay. My mama taught me wrong from right. I was born in the South. Sometimes I have a big mouth when I see something that I don't like. I gotta say it.
Michelle Morin here on AM 740 KVOR, as always, telling you what big media won't. I hope you've had a wonderful weekend, and after a big week going on in the world around us, and joining me to find out what big media won't tell you, my producer and I just went through, was it 17 minutes from MSNBC this morning? I checked in with the big media this morning and actually pushed my way through most of a 17-minute segment on MSNBC Big Media.
Michelle, I just have to correct you.
Tell me.
It was 22 minutes and 38 seconds.
Ugh, with no ads, no commercials.
No ads, and my ears are bleeding.
Okay, all right. That's Jason, my awesome millennial producer. Yeah, this is why I do what I do, friends. 22 minutes, big media devoted to bashing Trump. And Jason's working on the audio right now. We're going to try to bring that in later in the show. I watched it this morning. I did a little ranting on social media about it and, you know, banging the table in my kitchen this morning as I'm watching it. Because Nancy Pelosi was the guest speaker. It was Mika and Joe Scarborough on Friday's edition of Mornings with Joe. And then there were two other guys there. It was this co-ed panel that resembled The View, if you ask me. And it was, why did I watch it? Because sometimes I just have to watch it and be reminded of why I'm here behind this microphone. I am here to tell you what they won't, but I'm going to tell you what they say too. They started this segment with Nancy Pelosi, and I'm going to let her say it best once we get ready for that. But did you know that Nancy Pelosi's always invoking God in everything she says? I think that's to win us over. And she talks about how the president uses charm and it doesn't win her over. And she starts talking about our founders and their vision and our precious Bill of Rights. It is so repulsive because none of that has anything to do with what follows. The next 17 minutes or so are salivating over each other, these five people salivating over each other against Trump and victimizing poor former FBI director James Comey because, gosh, he was in a room with Trump and he was so scared. And what would you do if you were in a room with Trump? So we'll go through some of that a little bit later. I want to focus most of at least the first part of the show tonight. I want to do some comparing and contrasting. I think you're going to find this quite interesting. I've got, we've got some audio. We've got, I've got five people that I want to compare and contrast. We're going to talk about two heroes, and it's going to go two heroes, actually three heroes, and then it's going to go downhill from there. The three heroes are the Lion of London Bridge. Have you heard of the Lion of London Bridge? If you haven't, you are in for such a treat. We're going to start with him. Then we're going to go to the Brevard County, Florida Sheriff Wayne Ivey. Man, you be prepared to just sit down and breathe a breath of fresh air when you hear what he had to say. I think this was on Friday that he posted. And then the other hero are the American people who went out yesterday and protested Sharia. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. The question in my mind is, Are we beyond the point where protesting works? I'm not saying we shouldn't protest, but at these protests, we had anti-Sharia protesters. And, of course, the Antifa showed up. Antifa? I don't even know how they say it. They are instruments of the left. They are fascists that call themselves anti-fascists. And they wear masks. These are the same guys that I spoke with back at the Trump rally here in the Springs about 2 months ago. These are probably many of them are paid. I don't suspect that all of them are paid, but probably the ringleaders are. They show up at these events. They show up with their masks, and they show up to intimidate and bully. And I do know that violence broke out, and violence doesn't break out until they show up because they want to silence the rest of us who are protesting. One of my questions, though, is here we've got protesters that it's disturbing that we're protesting Sharia law in America. When, to the best of my historical knowledge, prior to the last decade, protests about wars were about wars that were outside of our borders. Now we're protesting a war that's inside our borders, and it's not only a war, it's a law that has worked its way into communities. It's worked its way into a respectful place in the judiciary and within our culture. That is disturbing, and it should be a wake-up call that just that is happening. And then not only do we have these protesters out protesting Sharia law, then we got the other angle from the left. So we're protesting, people who have infiltrated our land. And then we got the other infiltrated left attacking our people just because they can, because they're disruptive and they hate America. They hate capitalism, and they're funded and propelled by Mr. America hater himself, George Soros. So I was thinking about this morning. When we are being attacked on our own soil from all sides and all different factions of the left, we're just protesting, right? What is it working? Is the protesting working, number one? Is it enough? Obviously, it's not. What do we need to do? What do you and I need to do? I really would like to engage you tonight. I'd like you to call me. Message me on Facebook. You can even email me at michelle@kvor.com. But the phone number here is 719-540-0740. I want to hear from you. Things are not well. Things are not well here in America. And just that instance right there, you already knew that. But it's intensifying. It's heating up. What do we do? What do we do? What do we do practically? What do we do politically? What do we do as we live our daily lives? The left is energized and fueled by big money. We are energized and fueled by taking care of our families, taking on an honorable job, working, taking care of our families, being volunteers, whatever it is that we do. That's what energizes and fuels us. And what we have left over is protesting on the weekends. And the left is full-time, 24/7, 365 days a year. We're going to come back to that. But that is my question of the night. It's one of my questions is, what do we do? How do we deal with this? This really is new to us. Obama's fundamental transformation has had its effects. We're going to talk about how the left within the bureaucracies is calling itself, there's a group that's calling itself, it's a constitution group. I'll have to find that. I am going to touch on that. Can't remember the exact name, but it's in my stack here. But the left is veiling itself as with words that they try to appear constitutional. They try to appear on our side. They're just masters at spin and masters at deception. And I don't know that everyone is aware that this is going on, but they are working very, very hard at creating a deep state resistance to Trump. And that's not just, it's really not against Trump. He's just the figurehead. We put him there, and it's a deep state resistance against you and me. It's a great big deep state resistance to you and me. We'll come back to that. But like I said, three heroes, the Lion of London Bridge, the Brevard County, Florida Sheriff, Wayne Ivey, and you and me, and those of us who take time out of our day to go actually to a protest. Have you been to a protest? I can't tell you they're exactly fun. I've been to a few. They're not something I really enjoy, especially when the left shows up and gets intimidating and starts their bully tactics. It really takes the fun off of it. But that is what's happening. And then we're going to compare and contrast those three heroes to former FBI Director Comey and London Mayor Sadiq Khan. So I want to paint the picture for you about how things are unfolding, what's really going on, who's saying what, who's in power in what they're saying, and who's taking ownership of where they live and who they love and protecting what's important to them. It's a discussion we need to have. Give me a call, 719-540-0740, and we'll be back with that and a lot more here on AM 740 KVOR.
The things big media won't tell you.
Trying to make up his own facts, and that is our job.
Yeah. The Michelle Moran Show.
I'm back, and we are going to start tonight by talking about a hero. If you have not heard about the Lion of London Bridge, you're going to hear about him now. All right, so recall. I was going to ask you to recall the most recent terrorist attack. That was about a week ago in London on the London Bridge. And Breitbart did us the favor of assembling a list of how many murders have been inflicted by Islam, because right now we're in the middle of their holy month of Ramadan. Now, Ramadan is, according to Breitbart, says most Muslims follow the tradition of abstaining from eating, drinking, smoking, having sex, and other physical needs each day during Ramadan. However, other adherents of Islam perceive it as a time when martyrdom and jihad is especially rewarded in paradise, which prompts a spike in terrorist attacks. All right. Breitbart went to, they have a source here. Let's see if I can find that. Religion of Peace website. And Breitbart is saying that we're only into the first 14 days of Ramadan. And we are already, the terrorists have already inflicted more death than they did back in 2016. It's been, they said, more than 70 attacks have occurred in 21 predominantly Muslim countries, which has yielded an estimated 1,003 fatalities and 1,036 injuries. That's a lot. In 2016, there were 421 deaths and 729 injuries during Ramadan. So the terrorists are at it. They're at it hard. And they're succeeding quite well. How in the world can they be succeeding when the climate, the sky's falling, right? That's all big media tells you. You will not hear these statistics in big media. In fact, as I said at the beginning of the show, you're going to hear 22 minutes of anti-Trump cheerleading from big media. That's it. The threat is real, and this is the stain on the world right now. But lo and behold, we have heroes in the world, and I want to share this one. All right, the Lion of London Bridge. If you haven't heard of this guy, prepare to be amazed. Now, granted, he'd had 4 or 5 pints of beer when he did his heroic act, but it doesn't matter to me. He still did it. And I, you know, that's a reflection of, you know, a little bit of drinking, but it also has some bravado in there. This guy, his name is Roy Larner. He's 47 years old, and he single-handedly took on the three terrorists with wielding their knives who took carried out the London Bridge attack last week. Ironically, he was sitting in the black and blue pub There's some interesting irony in the name of that pub, because that's where he was sitting, and he decided he wasn't going to let these guys maim people in that bar. So he's sitting in this pub. He says, Larner is his last name, the Lion of London Bridge. He said that when the terrorists first entered the Black and Blue pub, he said there was loads of noise. Now, I wish this interview was on audio. I would love to hear this guy's British accent and hear him recount the story. He's in a hospital right now, and if you look him up, he looks like one of those, you know, when we were kids and there would be someone in a cartoon character or in like a B-rated movie who got run over by a car or got beaten up, and they're in the hospital and their arms and legs are all wrapped up and their legs hung up in a sling and they're laying in the hospital bed. This is what the guy looks like. He's got his arms bandaged up. He's got his chest bandaged up. He's got stitches on the back of his head down to his neck. Because he took on these guys, these terrorists. So here's what he said. So I wish that you just put it in your mind what I'm saying in this awesome British voice. And this is a football guy. And in England, football is soccer. So he's a football guy who loves Millwall, which is the one of the teams over there. But he said there was lots of noise. No one knew what was happening. Then the bouncers tried to shut the door. The terrorists were pushing against the doors to get in. Everyone inside was running around in panic. A few tried to get out the back, and others hid under tables or behind counters. The men then smashed open the door where I was standing. The three of them stood together. All right, so that's the beginning of what happened in this Black and Blue pub where Roy Larner is sitting having a drink. He's having it. This is all according to The Sun. He's having a drink, I think he said, with his 90-year-old friend. So he's already feeling somewhat protective of his friend. But he was in there, and the three terrorists burst in chanting, "Islam! This is for Allah!" Well, instead of running for the exit, do you know what Larner did? He confronted these evil losers. He confronted them, and they're carrying, as in his words, machetes. I can't say. If you can do it with a British accent, Jason, go for it. We have a little bit of audio from this guy, but it's not very clear. We'll play it in a minute. So he takes these three terrorists wielding machetes head on, and he saved countless lives as he gave staff and other drinkers time to escape. He said they had these long knives and started shouting about Allah. Then it was Islam, Islam, Islam. Like an idiot, I shouted back at them. I thought, I need to take the P out of these B's. Those are profane words. I took a few steps toward them and I said, "F you, I'm Millwall." So they started attacking me. I stood in front of them, trying to fight them off. Everyone else ran to the back. I was on my own against all three of them. That's why I got hurt so much. It was just me trying to grab them with my bare hands and hold on. I was swinging. He ended up getting stabbed 8 times. 8 times by these guys. He said, "I got stabbed and sliced 8 times. They got me in my head, my chest, and both hands. There was blood everywhere. They were saying, 'Islam, Islam.' I said again, 'F you, I'm Millwall.' It was the worst thing I could have done as they carried on attacking me. Luckily, none of the blows were straight at me or I'd be dead. All three were on me. I couldn't hold them back. Two got past me, and I was one-on-one. He kept slashing and hacking away at me. They were stabbing and slashing at me as I waved my arms for 20 or 30 seconds. Then he said they ran out of the pub and legged it. I went outside and saw them head towards the Wheatsheaf pub. Then from nowhere I heard gunshots and saw all three go down. I didn't think of my safety at the time, obviously. I'd had 4 or 5 pints, nothing major. I can handle myself. But I was out with an old person, and it was out of order. It wasn't until I was in a police car that I realized it was in a bad way. I'd been sliced up all over." This is the Lion of London Bridge. Listen to that. Where did he come from? Where did this guy come from? Barehanded. He goes up against these three terrorists carrying machetes. Granted, he'd had a few drinks, but he still did it.
I just love this guy because he didn't care. He had a few drinks. He saw these guys break in, and so he just barreled at them, tackled him, just started swinging around.
Yeah.
He didn't even grab a chair, nothing. He just didn't think about it.
No.
And I love that.
I love it too. He's a hero. We have a little bit of audio because I want you to hear him. He's not a very clear speaker. Obviously, he's in the hospital. He just got out of intensive care, I think, yesterday. So this poor guy has been in the hospital for a week in intensive care, and they're trying to interview him. That's probably why his voice is a little bit tough to understand, but you have to hear something.
And he's very, very, very British.
Yeah. Oh, yes, he's very British. So take a listen to this. This is Roy Larner, 47-year-old British, who was truly the hero at the London Bridge attack.
Well, from the night they was coming in, they was kicking the door in the black and blue, up to the bats to this day. Three of them, and machetes, come in. But the first instance was, this guy going, all that blah, 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 blah thing. I don't know why I did it, but I went blah, 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 blah back. And they said, f*** you. You're not getting in here. I was stopping them getting in to the restaurant to stop them attacking the children and families in there. It's happened in about 20 seconds. As I got them out of the black and blue, the police were firing them straight away. So I've got slashes to the arms and hands, stabbed in the side of my stomach, chest. I've got slashes on my neck, head, and ear hole coming off.
All right. Wasn't that beautiful? He said they were saying blah, 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 blah. So he said blah, 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 blah back. And F you. This is a real man. I'm overwhelmed that there are actually, especially in Britain, that's probably not a very, I probably shouldn't have said that. That's not a very nice thing to say. You just don't hear about this, right? It's not like the Wild Wild West anymore.
You don't hear about it anywhere, let alone Britain. You'd think, okay, because they just had like three attacks and you didn't hear anything about that. This is the first time we've seen anyone attack back.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. That's it. We've never had anyone push back. Never. Everybody does what? Run, hide, and tell. Right? This guy did not run, hide, and tell. What's really funny, I urge you to look him up online. It's not made up. There are pictures of him in the hospital with his stitches and his wrapped up limbs. And he's funny. His friends got him a runner's magazine. And there's a picture of it. It says, "Learn to Run" on the front. So I hope that you enjoy hearing this because, golly, what a breath of fresh air. We have heroes in the world. We have heroes in the world who will push back with their bare hands. I've got kids in martial arts. And what we've learned is if you're face-to-face with someone with a gun, you've got a better chance of surviving than if you're face-to-face with someone with a knife, because that knife can slice you up with many, many, many sides where the gun has one trajectory. Extremely brave man. It's a miracle he's alive. More when we come back on The Michelle Morin Show here on AM 740 KVOR.
The things big media won't tell you with Michelle Morin on AM 740 KVOR.
All right, I'm at 719-540-0740. Join me tonight as we talk about how do we address this looming threat. While big media is talking about how badly they hate Trump, i.e. you and me, for voting for Trump, I'm going to tell you what's really going on. And you already know. You and I both know that terrorism is the most evil stain on the globe at the moment. And we all know that there's no pushback. Now, I say that, I have to qualify that because finally, we have an American president who is pushing back. He went over to the Middle East and, in my not so humble opinion, bravely called out Islam's ideology and the evil and terror that they bring into the world, and said that we're not going to stand for it. He's back in the States now, and golly, you know, As much as I get very frustrated with Trump, and there's so much I dislike about him, there's so much I like about what he's doing. When he does something right, he does it right. And I also have a lot of empathy for him. He inherited the messiest, nastiest situation that any president has ever stepped into. Interestingly enough, all of the Russiagate scandal, all of the Comey scandal, that's all phony. What a waste of our dollars that have gone into the hearings about this. And what a waste of hot air coming from big media about all of it. And what a waste going into the minds of Americans as they continually cast doubt and cast the shadow of darkness and criminality upon President Trump. You know, for all of Trump's shortcomings, I don't see him as a criminal. There's nothing that has come up that would lead me to believe he's a criminal. He's learning as he goes. He came into this job not really embracing the Constitution. I'm hopeful, as I've said before, that he's learning as he goes and that he's getting, he's hearing constitutional principles and ideas and hearing, you know, well, Mr. President, the reason that the First Amendment exists and the reason that you don't want to do such and such or such and such is because these are the unintended consequences. I'm hoping he's hearing this. I'm hoping he's hearing it and putting it together. He's so unpredictable. But nonetheless, I have a ton of empathy for his situation because it's like whack-a-mole. He whacks one and another one comes up and it's just never ending. And the attacks against him personally and against his family personally, those take a toll. I don't care how tough you are. I don't care how tough you want to be. When you're getting attacked personally like that incessantly, and particularly when it's against your family, it's extremely difficult to endure. You can tough it out. You can say you don't care. And over time, he will develop a thick skin toward it. But it's tough and it's wearing. He's already indicated he's pretty worn out from just being president. He didn't even mention the unique difficulties he faces as a president. But I digress. My point was that we have a president who's finally pushing back against Islamic terror. And to his credit, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been pushing back against Islamic terror since the day he went into office. So I don't ever want to discredit him. He has been probably one of the most impressive men on the world stage in a long, long time. And he has held his own. And in that tiny, wonderful country of Israel, it's still there. And he doesn't put up with any bunk or any guff. He does everything he can to stand up to it. So anyway, we're talking about the fact that what brought this on for me was seeing that we had anti-Sharia protests yesterday. And, of course, the fascists who call themselves anti-fascists who wear masks because they're too cowardly to reveal themselves, and they like to bully and intimidate with all the dark clothing and the dark masks. They show up and bully the anti-Sharia protesters and start the violence. And it just got me thinking this morning, it infuriated me actually, that here we've got decent Americans doing what they know, protesting an ideology that has infiltrated our nation, our nation's judicial system, our nation's culture, our nation's narrative. Our nation's now has safe spaces for Muslims. And we've got good, decent Americans protesting the absurdity and the evil that has worked its way into our borders. Thank you, Mr. Obama, for enabling, inviting, and creating that environment for us. So we've got people out protesting, and it's disturbing. It's disturbing that protests against wars used to be about wars outside of our borders. Now we're protesting wars within our borders. How does that work is my question. What's the final outcome? What do we really need to do? Do the protests work? And the left knows that the pushback's going to be minimal, or they wouldn't show up. They wouldn't show up with their bullying. George Soros wouldn't fund them. They wouldn't show up. And I also highlighted Roy Larner, the British football fan, who took on barehanded the three terrorists at the London Bridge last week, because I want to open this discussion and talk about what it takes to defeat this stain that's just encroaching upon every nation, particularly ours, and what do we need to do? I do not have the answer. I'm hoping that you will call me and provide, you know, help. Let's figure this out together. I do know that I said I was going to compare and contrast three heroes with two not-so-heroes. First hero was the Lion of London Bridge. Second hero were the anti-Sharia protesters yesterday who took time out of their lives to go protest, and, of course, they get pushed back and bullied. And then the third hero is a sheriff by the name of Wayne Ivey. He is the sheriff of Florida's Brevard County. He created a post on Facebook. I think it was on Friday. I want to share parts of that with you. It's a little long. So I'm going to cut in and comment on what he had to say. We've cut it down significantly already, Jason and I have. I want you to hear this, because if every sheriff across the nation would come out and say what Florida's Brevard County Sheriff Wayne Ivey says in this audio clip, things would be different. Protests would be different. The crime that goes on in America via the migrants and the illegals and the Islamic terrorists would be different. Think about the attacks that have gone on. San Bernardino, Boston, the Boston Marathon, all these attacks. When has there been pushback? Is a protest a pushback? Now listen to Sheriff Wayne Ivey. We'll start with this. I'll cut in and we'll make a conversation out of it.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sheriff Wayne Ivey, and you're on scene with the Brevard County Sheriff's Office. Like each of you, I am sickened and deeply concerned about the cowardly attacks that are taking place around the world, attacks where defenseless citizens are being murdered and critically injured. Terrorists and active shooters are using every weapon available to target citizens. Guns, knives, trucks, hammers, and even explosives have all become the weapon of choice for murderers who only have one goal, killing innocent and law-abiding citizens.
All right. So he sets the stage by just kind of laying it out. We've got terrorists using any and all weapons possible. It's gone from suicide bombers to anything they can get their hands on. Knives, vehicles, crockpots with explosives, whatever it takes. And what is their number one goal? To target innocent citizens. They don't even know that the citizens they're targeting resist Islam. They're just doing it to inflict terror and fear. And guess what? It does work. But let's listen to what the sheriff has to say.
Folks, now more than ever is the time for our citizens to be prepared to serve as the first line of defense.
Ah.
Not only for them, but for their families when the attack happens.
Stop. All right. Now's the time for our citizens to be the first line of defense. This is a United States sheriff imploring us to be our own first line of defense. Think about that. He's going to expand upon this more. But think about Ray Larner from Britain. Who was the first line of defense at the London Bridge terrorist attack? It was him. He took ownership of his surroundings. He took ownership of protecting the people that were around him. He didn't even know them, but he knew evil walked in the door and someone had to stop it. Keep going with the sheriff.
Happens. And let me be perfectly clear. Doing nothing or just hoping it won't happen to you is not going to save your life. For those who think that it can't or won't happen here, trust me when I tell you that it's already happening all around us. And the only thing left to question is when and where it will happen again and how many more innocent lives will be lost.
Okay. I ask that question frequently. It is, when will it happen again and where will it happen again? And if we here in Colorado Springs or here in, just in Colorado think it's not going to happen here, we've got bad news coming if we don't push back. We've got a mayor in Denver who is creating a sanctuary city and luring these people in, much like Obama did, and he's sending out the signal, come on in here, come on in here. So they are not going to necessarily not be here in Colorado.
Preparing Americans to protect themselves is a conversation we need to have right now. And giving our citizens the ability to survive a violent attack is not only politically correct, it's the absolute best way we can help protect those we took an oath to protect. Yesterday, I saw a news story where in other parts of the world, they are telling citizens if they are attacked to run, hide, and tell. Really? Coaching citizens that the best way to save their life and the life of a family member, coworker, or friend is to run, hide, and tell? What's next? Ask you to run, hide, and then draw a line in the sand while daring the cold-blooded murderer to cross it?
Okay. Not- Think about Ray from Britain. He didn't run, hide, and tell, and he saved lives. He took ownership of it, and the guy saved lives. And that run, hide, and tell, I remember watching the news and the Twitter, the tweets coming out from London. They're telling their people to run, hide, and tell. Does that not make your stomach sick like it makes mine sick? What does that do in the mind of the attackers? What does that do in the mind of the left? What does that do in the minds of the Islamic terrorists? It fuels them. It fuels them. Good grief. If there's no pushback and they want to create fear, there you go. They know we're going to run, hide, and tell.
Not here. In my book, what's next is to fully understand that this is war, and you better be prepared to wage war to protect you, your family, and those around you if attacked. I am firmly convinced that as Americans, we can no longer sit back and pray the fight isn't brought to us.
Okay.
Instead, we...
All right. The sheriff said this is war. That is so politically incorrect. Those words are in the left's mind here in America. Those are alarmist words. And he's, you know, I don't know how much big media is going to push back against him. But if you and I start talking about that, we're going to be cast as alarmists and crazy. But you know what? Reality wins in the end. And this is reality. They've declared war on us. And if we don't start listening to this kind of advice and truth, he's right. When and where is just a matter of time. And it's going to hit people we love. And I just am not prepared to concede to that.
Instead, we have to stand together, shoulder to shoulder, prepared and ready to issue an immediate and directed response when the attack happens. Terrorists and active shooters know that our citizens have been coached to run and hide and then patiently await help. In fact, they count on it so they can strategically target as many citizens as possible. What they don't count on is being attacked themselves, having to become defensive to save their own lives.
Exactly.
No matter who you are or what your position is on guns, there is no denying the fact that the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun or a knife is an armed and well-prepared citizen or law enforcement officer. There is no doubt that as soon as 911 is called, law enforcement is on the way. However, until they arrive, it's up to you and those with you to neutralize or eliminate the threat. You have to make a decision right now, right this moment, to be prepared to save your life and those you love when the attack happens. Sun Tzu says in The Art of War that every battle is won or lost before it's ever fought. As a society and a community, we can no longer afford to wait for the attack to happen and then develop our survival strategy. We have to fight this battle on the front end by preparing ourselves to fully respond against the attackers when the time comes. As sheriff, I encourage you to be prepared to protect yourself and develop your survival strategy right now.
Yep.
If you have a concealed carry permit, then carry your gun with you at all times possible. It's not doing you any good at the house or in the car when the attack happens. Remember, if you've chosen a gun to protect yourself in the event of a violent attack, then you need to practice on a regular basis, arming yourself with anything you can use to protect yourself.
Okay. That's good. I think that gets the point across. Was that a breath of fresh air? Because to me, that's just basic law enforcement 101. That's what a sheriff should be saying. That's what every sheriff should be saying across this nation. We have to be our first line of defense. And we're sitting ducks. I was wondering as I was listening to him, I wonder... This may be a little far-fetched. I wonder if our own president would go so far as to issue a statement like this. I fear that it may actually come to that. Because if more of us don't push back, like the Lion of London Bridge, it's not going to stop. When does it stop? How does it stop? What are we prepared to do to stop it? These are all questions that we need to be talking about as a community, as a state, as neighbors. What are we going to do? They're not stopping, my friends. They are not going to stop. None of the left is going to stop in all of its shapes or forms or sizes. We're going to talk about the mayor of London. Huge contrast in how he wants to handle this when we come back.
The Things Big Media Won't Tell You with Michelle Marin on AM 740 KVOR.
All right, the number here is 719-540-0740. What are we to do to prepare for what's happening in Europe, what's happening here at a much higher intensity level? We're seeing that the left is not stopping. They are targeting Trump as the figurehead, but really, my friends, they're targeting you and me for electing Trump. There was an LGBT pride march, and where was this? The Charlotte Pride Parade. This was on June 7th. This is from Fox 46. There's a group that says the Charlotte Pride is pushing them out of the gay pride parade because they, guess what, support President Trump. I'm very proud of my country, proud of my president, and was once proud of my community, said Brian Talbert, who said he's proud to be gay and proud to be a Trump supporter. His truck has a Trump-Pence bumper sticker and not a liberal sign on the back window. He says, I'm proud of my vote. I don't regret my vote. I will vote for Trump again. I'm proud of my president. I don't think I should be vilified because I'm proud of a U.S. president as an American. This guy Talbert, he's a member of Gays for Trump. It's in Charlotte, North Carolina. He sent an application to the Charlotte Pride so they can have a float in the year's Charlotte Pride Parade, and they were denied. They were denied because they were for Trump. So it's, you know, the left will say, oh, it's all about love. Love wins. Love beats hate. You know, that's just projection. The left hates more than anybody you and I know. They're angry. They're victims. They hate. They hate anything and everything that does not bow down to whatever God they have put in front of us. And they're not going to stop. So, as the sheriff said, we are at war. I can't say it enough. I'm not sure when. I think that you and I, my listeners, understand this. What do we do? We've got a president under attack constantly. I think he struggles just. I know what it's like to multitask and have so much going on in a day that I forget things. Things have to go on the back burner. I have so much going on in my life that I am notoriously late for appointments. I forget things constantly. It's just because there's so much going on, and I have a lot to manage. And I'm not the president of the United States who inherited a mess that was put upon him, and it's deliberately turning against him. So not only does he have a lot to manage, but he has his own emotions to manage in the process. And the point of exhaustion for this president, I bet he just falls into bed before any of us do. This is just an insane time. So we're comparing and contrasting heroes. We've talked about the three heroes. We've talked about the anti-Sharia protesters who went out yesterday. We talked about the Lion of London Bridge, and we talked about Brevard County, Florida Sheriff Wayne Ivey. Those are heroes. They're saying what needs to be said. They're doing what needs to be done. The Lion of London Bridge just all out put his life on the line and miraculously survived. It's I hate to say it's hilarious because he's cut up. He got hacked to pieces. But he's got a great attitude. He just did what he does, especially when he's had 4 to 5 pints of beer. But he took them on. And I was saying before we went to the break at the end of the first half hour, my kids are involved in martial arts, so they learn a lot about situational awareness, what to do in certain situations. So they learn, for example, what to do if you're at the wrong side of a gun. And if you're at the wrong side of a gun and it's 10 feet away from you, you're pretty much in a no-win situation. If you're fortunate enough that that gun carrier gets close to you to where you know how to move the trajectory away from you, you can probably survive that encounter. However, if you've got someone coming after you with a knife, particularly a 12-inch knife that might even be a machete, that is like danger zone 100. That is a very bad situation to be in because the knife doesn't have a single trajectory. It's got nearly, it's got double-sided and a point. It's not easy to get away from. All that to say that Roy Larner, this British guy who's I'm Millwall, he said. Very brave guy, and he took him on, and he didn't think about his own life. He just took them on. Did you know that those attackers had fake bomb belts on themselves? They had water bottles that they wrapped in duct tape. And they put them on so that they were obvious to clearly to incite more fear factor. So I would say, you know, in my limited experience as a terrorist, they were probably putting those on to prevent someone like Ray Larner from coming after them, because who wants to go after a guy who's going to push a button and detonate and explode everybody? These guys will do anything at all. We're going to be talking about the perverted ruling in Idaho, where the Islamic sex attackers walk free. We're going to be talking about the mayor of London and so much more when we come back here on AM 740 KVOR.
These are the things big media won't tell you.
Trying to make up its own fact, and our job.
Yeah. The Michelle Moran Show.
Give me a call, 719-540-0740. We're comparing and contrasting heroes in this Islamic war against us and not-so-heroes. And I just tuned in to another headline here. Here's a not-so-hero, John McCain. You know, Senator, you were a hero in your day. You're not a hero as a senator at all. You are a traitor to everything I believe in. You are constantly undermining what I'm trying to do. Here's the latest example of how. According to The Guardian, McCain was visibly irked when asked about comments Trump made last week. Remember, Trump came out and spoke against the London mayor, Sadiq Khan. Well, John McCain didn't like that. And he asked, what do you think the message is? This is McCain. He answers his question. The message is that America doesn't want to lead. They're not sure of American leadership, whether it be in Siberia or whether it be in Antarctica. Really, Senator McCain? Because I finally, I know that Trump is leading in this war against terror, finally. And yes, the world knows that there's leadership in that area right now. Absolutely. Sorry if you're not enjoying this. I'm sorry if you don't like it, because here's what McCain says next. He was asked if America's international standing was better under Obama. McCain responded, well, as far as American leadership is concerned, yes. Go home, Senator. You are not fit to be an American senator anymore. You know, everyone thinks you're untouchable because you are a prisoner of war. You have that time that's honorable, and I'm sorry you went through that, and I respect your service. I did not go through anything like that. I respect the fact that you endured tortures and imprisonment that most of us will never experience. However, as a senator, you need to just retire, resign. You've got a retirement waiting for you at our expense anyway. Take it and go away. Can you believe he said that? All right, there's an incident in Idaho. I've talked about it a few times on this show, and now we have an update that's going to send you through the roof. Twin Falls County Prosecutor, this is from WorldNet Daily. This is in Twin Falls. There were three Muslim refugee boys in Twin Falls, Idaho. This was, when was this? Back in, it was at least a year ago, maybe a little longer. A horrific assault of a five-year-old Idaho girl. The boys were 7, 10, and 14. Two were from Iraq. One was from Sudan. And this case finally went to court. They took this little girl into, I think, a laundry room, and they stripped her down. They raped her. They urinated on her. I believe they did worse than that. I don't even like describing it. And the oldest boy filmed the whole thing. So there's evidence. Five-year-old American Idaho girl, this victim of this grotesque assault from Muslim refugee boys. Have you heard about it in big media? No. No one has heard about this case in big media. And now the judge is going to make sure none of us hear anything about it. This case went to court, and Twin Falls Judge Thomas Borison of Idaho's 5th Judicial District has issued a gag order preventing everyone in the courtroom from saying anything about the sentence that these boys received. Borison allowed the family to say that they were unhappy with the sentencing, but he threatened to jail them for contempt if they say why they're not happy. The family's attorney has also been bound by this judge's gag order. Can you believe this is happening here in America? This is an activist judge who is shutting down the First Amendment. You and I would say deserve to know. It is our right to know what's going on, what's happening to our daughters in this country. And the people of Twin Falls deserve and have a right to know what happened to this little girl, what happened in the courtroom, and how these boys were sentenced. Turns out that there were about 12 to 15 people in the courtroom for the sentencing hearing, and one of these people leaked the outcome to Pam Geller. I've talked about Pam Geller. She's an excellent source for all things Islamic. She's got a price on her head, unfortunately, because of it. We hear a lot from her that big media will never tell you. So Pam Geller took the liberty of sharing what she was told, and here's what we know. This is from a leak, and she said, everything that was said in the courtroom was designed to portray these three boys as victims. They were the victims. Throughout the proceedings, they were repeatedly called victims. The court heard about how the attackers are doing well in school, how smart they are. They were praised for the supposed ordeal they had to go through going into court, and that they're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. You've got to be kidding me. This is unconscionable that a judge has put a gag order on this. It's unconscionable that this is the leading narrative in that courtroom. Geller says that after this love fest, which lasted 5 hours in the courtroom, all three boys were sentenced one after the other. They were all given probation. They weren't found guilty of rape. They were found guilty of sexually lewd conduct. The five-year-old victim was never mentioned by the judge or by the police. When the mother completed her statement, the judge lashed out at her. And she was viciously tongue-lashed for a full 15 minutes. It's surreal. Don't you agree? It's surreal what's going on. And is it any wonder we had anti-Sharia protests yesterday all across the country? This must be protest. I hope that one of the people in the courtroom just says, you know what? Fine. I'll be in contempt of court, but at least it's out there. And at least this judge can have some spotlight on him so that this kind of unconstitutional, tyrannical judiciary is exposed. What would happen? I don't know. But this is, it's beyond belief. It seems like something that would be going on in Europe, which, by the way, in Sweden, we've talked about Sweden a lot. Ironically, that's the one European country I have actually been to. And I went there and I was insanely curious about what socialism is really like. And I got my experience, and the people they're people, they're nice people, but socialism is an ill that needs to be extinguished. And it turns out that the sexual attacks at entertainment centers like parks, amusement centers, they've increased 1,000% in the last year. Sweden is sinking under the weight of Islamic control and influence and domination, and no one's doing anything about it. I've also got some information here. Angela Merkel, I may have to come back to that. Angela Merkel was speaking. She's the German chancellor. She was speaking, I think it was yesterday, day before, side by side with the Mexican president, bashing walls. I wonder what she meant by that. Just bashing walls. She mentioned the Great Wall of China, the wall in Rome, another wall. And turns out that I turned the page in the news. And remember, she's the chancellor of Germany. She's the one who enables the Muslims. She's the one who brings all the migrants in. And Germany is probably second to Sweden in its number of attacks against women. Women can't even go out in ones or twos. They go out in threes and fours because the migrants, the Muslims are just waiting for them like animals. It turns out that Syrian refugees were in a pool and sexually molested a teenage girl. It looks like it was probably the same day as Merkel was talking about how walls are bad because we can't negotiate with the countries we're trying to keep out, and that's how we have to handle this. We have to negotiate, and we have to learn how to manage the migrants. It's infuriating. We're going to hear from the London mayor, Sadiq Khan, when we come back, and compare and contrast him to the Lion of London Bridge and Brevard County, Florida sheriff, because the London mayor, Sadiq Khan, is a Muslim. And I want you to hear him talk to London's big media. London's big media, Piers Morgan, would not have his nonsense. You want to hear this when we come back.
The things big media won't tell you with Michelle Morin on AM 740 KVOR.
Okay, call me at 719-540-0740. We're kind of all over the place. Primarily, we're talking about the heroes and the not-so-heroes. We've talked about the Lion of London Bridge, Brevard County, Florida Sheriff Wayne Ivey, and the anti-Sharia protesters that went out, took time out of their day yesterday to make a statement against the Sharia law and rule, the female genital mutilation, and all the other nasty, evil deeds that Islamic Sharia has brought into America. And now we're going to turn to the London mayor, Sadiq Khan. And my producer, Jason, I do want to introduce him to you. He is the best producer on the planet. He's a millennial. And by all appearances, he's a white male. So he's got a lot to say, usually, about the attacks against the white male here in America. And he says some of the most intriguing, he makes the most intriguing comments when we're off the air. And I want you, my listening audience, to get to know him a little bit, because he is a millennial. And I want you to know that there's hope for millennials. They're not all snowflakes. They are like Jason here, who puts this show on and makes it happen every Sunday.
I just want to make a note. I'm clearly a millennial, but I missed it by 2 years, I believe, according to all the facts.
Oh.
I was born in 86, and okay. I think the Generation X stopped at 84.
Oh.
So I just missed not being a millennial.
Okay.
And it kind of irks me a little bit.
All right. Well, we're going to say you're my almost millennial producer. Jason informed me, we had a caller a few minutes ago, Mike. And Mike, I urge you, if you would like to call, go right ahead. I will put you right on as soon as you call, unless I'm in the middle of an audio clip. I do apologize. It sounds like you waited one or two shows ago, and I don't like doing that to my callers. I will work on improving that. But if you have something to say tonight, give me a call back. In the meantime, sometimes big media gets it right. Can't believe I said that. But it's not here in America. We're going to take a trip over to Britain. There's a program called Good Morning Britain. And Pierce Morgan is one of the hosts. And there's another gal. I don't know who she is. But you're going to hear from them. And they're going to be they're talking to the London mayor. They're talking about why there are 400 jihadis still in London. The people in Britain are tired of being attacked. And apparently some in London's big media have about had it. Now, the London mayor, Sadiq Khan, is a Muslim. So by default, I don't trust anything he says. I don't trust his motives. I don't trust what his intentions are. And you're going to hear some of that in some of the audio here. He does not want to take an active stand against what's going on. He has come out and said, well, you know, being living in a big city, you just have to put up with these attacks. Total submission to, you know, and he's not submitting. He's submitting and subjecting the British, the London citizens to it. How do these people get elected is beyond me. That's one of these times when I have a few extra minutes, which I don't have. I will go look and see how he got elected, what the population dynamic is in London right now, or if it's actually enough Muslims to influence the elections that way, or if it's just that the Brits are more left-leaning and buy the whole line that, diversity is a great thing and a Muslim mayor is no problem whatsoever. With that said, listen to this audio clip. It's very entertaining from the standpoint that here again we have a Brit taking on evil, and it's Pierce Morgan, and he is putting this mayor in his, you know, he's calling him out. He's calling this mayor out for being too passive about the 400 jihadis. And the mayor starts talking about how, well, we don't have enough resources to fight the jihadis, and we don't have enough money to fight the jihadis. You know what? Where there's a will, there's a way. There's no will here. There's no will here. And it's obvious. I want you to hear it for yourself.
You are mayor of the capital city where the most recent terrorist attack has taken place. How many of those 400 have come back to London?
The estimate is just over half. So when you
where
look
are
at,
they?
When you look at well, when you look at the
no, but seriously,
how
where are
we
they?
Letting people back in to the UK who haven't just been trained? They've actually fought potentially against our troops. How are we letting them back in without knowing exactly where they are what they're up to? Because out of all the thousands of people that we're concerned about, surely those who've actually gone to fight are the biggest risk.
Well, that's one of the reasons why it doesn't make sense for the government to be cutting resources from those.
But where are they? You're the mayor of this capital city.
Notice he's not answering the question. He's not answering her question. She's grilling him as the mayor of London. Where are they and what are we doing about them?
I can't follow 400 people. What I can do is make sure
the
policies, because what we can do though is make sure we've got the resources for the police and the experts to follow these people.
Why can't you instruct the police? Why can't you call Cressida Dick right now and say every one of those people who's come back from a war zone, who's in London, I want them followed?
Let me see why. because the Met Police budget, roughly speaking, 15% to 20% is funded by mayor. The rest comes from central government. If the Met Police budget is being shrunk and reduced, they've got to prioritise and use their resources in a sensible, savvy way.
What could be a bigger priority than people coming back from a Syrian battlefield with intent to harm British citizens? Why is it not the number one priority? Why are these people just allowed to come back in the first place, and then the London mayor doesn't appear to have a clue where any of them are? I mean, no disrespect to you, but where are they?
Well, that's one of the questions that obviously the police and security services are
looking
into.
Mayor.
But this chap here...
Yeah, Sadiq, you're the mayor of London.
There you go. There you go. That's where big media is doing their job. In London, these two big media talking heads, Piers Morgan, and I'm sorry, I don't have the gal's name. If I find it, I'll tell you. But yeah, and the mayor, he has no will whatsoever to push back. He has no will to find the 400. It's all about the budget. Well, I don't have the budget. I don't have enough tax base. I don't have the resources. Piers Morgan's all, look, you're the mayor. Tell the head of police to go find them. You can do this. Well, translation, I don't want to. I don't want to.
I just want to pop in for a
all
second.
Right, Jason?
Part of that clip, Sadiq said the mayor's office, either him, I don't believe it's him personally, but the mayor's office is responsible for 15 to 20% of that budget.
Uh-huh.
So a quarter of it is from him. He can't find the money to fund that. He doesn't want to.
He doesn't want to.
That's obvious. He just said it. He doesn't want to.
He doesn't want to. See, if I lived in London, I would be terrorized. Ah, is that the term? Because that's what they want. The mayor is just this peaceable guy who doesn't have the resources. We all just have to accept the violence that's coming and let them come in and, equip our police force to deal with it appropriately. But we really don't have enough budget to take care of it. The guy's a liar. And you know what? You know what? In Islam, it is a virtue to lie if it furthers the Islamic cause. I don't have the exact Quranic quote for that, but I will try to find that. But no, it's obvious to anyone who wasn't born yesterday that this London mayor does not give a rat's rear end about the safety of the London people. His job is to look as though he's protecting London while he is just, he's kind of doing the Barack Obama thing. Come on in. Come on in, make yourselves at home. I am acclimating the people to your violence. I am acclimating the people to the terror. I am acclimating everyone. Just keep on coming in and do your Sharia thing. Do your violence. And wow, I would not want to live there. I wish I knew some people in London I could call and find out what they really think about this. They're getting tired. Even their big media is tired of the attacks. Why aren't we having this discussion? Why isn't our big media having this same Q&A with our leftist lawmakers here in America? Why not? Why didn't they have this discussion with Obama for 8 years? More when we come back.
You're listening to Michelle Morin on AM 740 KVOR.
All right, it's Michelle Morin. I am here to tell you what big media won't. Over the break, Jason, my almost millennial producer, we're talking. I introduced him a few minutes ago as, what did I say? He would...
I appear as a white male.
Yeah, by all outward appearances, he's a white male. We'll come back to that in a minute. We were talking about how did the London mayor get elected? I don't know. I need to go look it up. Is it because the Muslim population in London is that large? Or is it because the Londonites are just that left? And Jason has some input on that. And it's just basic common sense. It's human nature. What is it, Jason?
In my brain, it makes sense that a portion, probably not everybody, but a portion of the population who voted had a guilt thing thrown on them.
Yep.
They had a choice between probably a white candidate and then a Muslim candidate. And of course, if you vote for the white candidate, you must be racist. mm-hmm. because you're voting against the Muslim.
Yep.
And I'm sure a lot of people, they voted for the Muslim and said, oh, I'm a good person.
I think it's as simple as that. I really do. So I wanted you to hear that, but I also want to come back and clarify, by all outward appearances, my nearly millennial producer, Jason, is a white male. And we're going to clarify that because it's about the issue of race. It's no, he's not a transgender. And over the break, I entertained the possibility that my listeners, you all could maybe think that. That would be quite a twist, because then I could say I'm friends with transgender, and then no one could call me homophobe, right? Well, I am friends with a minority, my producer. Tell the audience what your ethnicity really is.
I am Hawaiian.
Yeah, and why is that significant?
Because we are the smallest minority group in the world as of right now.
So you're a super minority.
Yes. Well, I'm a literal minority. I mean, the last I checked, the minorities in the United States are becoming the majority, but they're still called minorities.
Okay.
Because of their skin color, not because of the amount of them here.
Okay, so you have to understand, Jason looks white.
I'm a white person appearance.
But he's not. No. He's a super minority.
I'm sure I could play that card if I go out and tan my skin and grow my hair out and do all that. But
well, with all that said, Jason is an authority on the race issue.
I wouldn't go that far. Let's not do the authority. I grew up in a Hawaiian minority household, but I wouldn't say I'm an authority. I didn't grow up in a poor, terrible, like, project out in wherever.
I know. But, you know, I get a lot of great, you know, comments about the white male and racism from you. And I think the audience needs to understand that you really do know what you're speaking about. So I wanted to clarify that for you all out there. Jason's my nearly millennial super minority producer who appears to be a white male.
Yes.
All right. We've been talking about the heroes, the Lion of London Bridge, Brevard County, Florida Sheriff Wayne Ivey, and the anti-Sharia protesters were the heroes of discussion tonight. The not-so-heroes are the London mayor, Sadiq Khan. And the other less-than-hero is former FBI Director James Comey. Oh, my gosh. I heard part of his testimony. I couldn't sit and listen to the whole thing. I tried to listen to the remainder of it this morning, and it's very long. I actually printed out the transcript. I have actually one audio clip from him. It's so immense, as Jason said. It's a beast of an audio to tackle and glean clips from. Oh, I found it. And So get in your mind, if you weren't listening to the first hour of the show, if you were listening, kind of rewind to the sheriff of Brevard County. If you could just put like a five-second clip of him, because here we've got a hero in Brevard County, Florida, a sheriff, and he's telling his people, his constituents, to arm up and defend yourselves, become your first line of defense, and figure out how to protect your loved ones yourself. Take ownership. And he said that these terrorists are not stopping, we're at war, and this guy's a tough guy. He's a man who understands the threat. We're at war, and he's telling it like it is. Do you have a clip? Just a quick one. If you didn't hear him in the first hour, I just want you to hear a little bit.
Preparing Americans to protect themselves is a conversation we need to have right now. Giving our citizens the ability to survive a violent attack is not only politically correct, it's the absolute best way we can help protect those we took an oath to protect.
Perfect. Perfect. And then we have the Lion of London Bridge. If you didn't listen to the first half hour, I was just celebrating this guy. His name's Roy Larner, British guy who took on the three jihadis with their machetes. They went into the wrong bar. It's kind of like the Clint Eastwood thing, except he's got four pints of beer in him and he's unarmed. And these three jihadis walk into the black and blue bar. This Roy Larner stands up, and he's not going to have it. He goes after these three Islamic terrorists barehanded, and he gets stabbed and hacked 8 times, barely survives. He's been in intensive care all week. He came out of intensive care yesterday, and he just tells the story in the most remarkable way. He's just a guy doing what was right. He didn't put his life was not of concern to him. He was protecting the other people in the bar and making sure he could do what he could to stop murders from happening. So we've got these two guys who are taking ownership of protecting what's good and doing what's right. And then we have the former FBI director, James Comey. And I've got his transcript printed out here, and I've got all my little notes. And the one word that he boils down to for me is coward. The guy is a coward, and I have no respect for him. I didn't have respect for him. I don't think you did either when he came out and helped Hillary escape being prosecuted. And he just keeps digging a deeper hole for himself. He's a self-serving political arm of the Clintons and the Obamas, and he cares nothing about his top duty, which is to protect the American people. He was appointed to be the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigations. That's investigations of crimes against Americans. And the guy is the biggest coward. He makes me sick. So he testified, I think it was Thursday, and just compare him to the sheriff, Sheriff Ivey, and compare him to the Lion of the London Bridge. And this is one of the most powerful people in America, or he was one of the most powerful people in America. And all he can do is kowtow to whomever tells him what to do. He came out and admitted that conversation he had on the tarmac with the Clintons and Attorney General Loretta Lynch, he came out and said that Loretta Lynch told him not to refer to Hillary's email leaks as an investigation. Instead, she told him to refer to it as a matter. So he did. He also confirmed that he leaked classified information, which Jason just told me that's not illegal for him to do that. Even if it's not illegal, doesn't mean it was right. But he came out and admitted that. He admitted that the president did not try to stop the FBI investigation into Russian involvement in the elections. And he came out and said that no one in the administration asked him to stop the Russian investigation. He basically just, he took out the whole Russian collusion speculation. It doesn't matter, though. The left's still going to run with that. But, you never know what this guy's going to say. He flips and he flops based on the day, based on the flavor of the day that saves his sorry rear. And he came out, he's angry at President Trump for firing him, and his language is just so cowardly. Do you have the one clip where he talks about how scared he was in the room with the president? Do we have that, Jason? That's the one single clip we got tonight. We had so many. I want you to just hear it. If you have heard it already, listen to it from this angle. And before we play it, I underlined a lot of what he said. He said words like, "What made me uneasy was," or "My impression was," "My sense was," "I remember thinking this is a very disturbing development." I mean, this is all about how this guy felt. He says, "I was a bit stunned. I didn't have the presence of mind. I was so stunned." This is ridiculous. What came to my mind is, be careful what you say. This is embarrassing. This is embarrassing. This is the top law enforcement official of our nation. And he's a freaking coward. Why? Ugh. I'm so thankful Trump fired him. He should have fired him first thing in. But listen to this clip where he's actually afraid of Trump being in the room with him. Ugh.
"My impression was something big is about to happen. I need to remember every single word that is spoken. My sense was the Attorney General knew he shouldn't be leaving, which is why he was lingering. And I don't know Mr. Kushner well, but I think he picked up on the same thing. And so I knew something was about to happen that I needed to pay very close attention to. A really significant fact to me is, so why did he kick everybody out of the Oval Office? Why would you kick the Attorney General, the President, the Chief of Staff out to talk to me if it was about something else? And so that to me, as an investigator, is a very significant fact.
As an investigator, Mr. Comey, none of what you just said is factual. None of it. You just said that as an investigator, that's an important fact. This guy doesn't talk facts at all during this hearing. He really doesn't ever talk facts even during the election. He doesn't care about facts. It's all about what he feels and what he thinks. The guy should have said to Loretta Lynch, he should have said to President Trump, he should have said to Clinton, anybody who asked, my job is to investigate what any crimes or alleged crimes that have gone on here in America, period. It's not about what I sense. It's not about what I feel. It's not about my concerns. It's about the facts. But this guy doesn't give a rip. He is a he's a political hack. And that's not who we want running the FBI. I watched a video today. Lou Dobbs on Fox News had Judicial Watch director on. Can't remember the guy's name. But this guy had heard from retired or resigned FBI agents, and the common denominator that they felt, how they felt about James Comey was that he's a dirty cop. And you can see that. I think it's worse. He's a dirty, cowardly cop, or was a dirty, cowardly cop. It's just disgusting. This is what Obama put in our nation. Cowards who kowtow to the leftist in charge, no matter who it is. And he's just griping about how Trump fired him. Get over it, little boy. Go home, because you're not going to be a dirty cop anymore. We'll be back. We're going to talk about Bernie Sanders' religious litmus test in the hearing, or the nomination hearings for Deputy Director of the White House Office of Management and Budget. If you haven't gotten fired up yet tonight, this one might send you over the edge. And don't leave me here alone. I'm going to go over the edge. Come with me. So we'll be right back.
The things big media won't tell you.
He's trying to undermine the media, trying to make up his own facts so that he can actually control exactly what people think. And that is our job.
Yeah. With Michelle Marin on AM 740 KVOR.
So we have a guy named Bernie Sanders who almost got the Democratic nomination for president of the United States. The guy is insanely popular with millennials. Insanely popular. And he's insanely Marxist. And he's unashamed and quite stupid about it. He will just repeat the Marxist mantra over and over again. He debated Ted Cruz over health care 3 months ago, 4 months ago. And when they're this dense, they don't debate. They just repeat the same thing over and over again. It's hilarious. The audio I'm about to share with you, my kids always hear a lot of a lot of this stuff. And my 17-year-old heard what we're about to hear. And, of course, I'm, slamming the table, and she said, he was dropped on his head as an infant. I assure you of that. It was a beautiful moment. I love my kids. They're brilliant, wonderful people. So Trump nominated Russell Vogt, I think that's how you say it, to be Deputy Director of the White House Office of Management and Budget. So like all nominees, they have to go through a question and answer session, and they have to get grilled by senators. This guy's no different. And Vogt happens to be a Christian. Vogt happens to have done an interview for a publication called Resurgent. And he answered some questions about Muslims and Christians. And he specifically was answering questions from the perspective of defending Wheaton College, which is a Christian private college in Chicago, I think. And I'm going to let you listen to the whole exchange, because here's Bernie Sanders grilling the nominee, Mr. Vogt, about his faith and just cannot stand how he is committed to his faith. And at the very end, that's what I want you to hear the most, because that's what I'm going to go to town about. So let's hear this very un-American grilling of a nominee to the Office of Management and Budget.
Their letter states, and I quote, "We write to express our deep concerns about the nomination of Russell Vogt to the position of Deputy Director of the White House Office of Management and Budget. Mr. Vogt has denigrated American Muslims and the Muslim faith. His writings demonstrate a clear hostility to religious pluralism and freedom that disqualify him for any appointment, including that of Deputy Director of the OMB."
Any appointment.
In the piece that I referred to that you wrote for a publication called Resurgent, you wrote, "Muslim, quote, Muslims do not simply have a deficient theology. They do not know God because they have rejected Jesus Christ, his son, and they stand condemned." End of quote. Do you believe that that statement is Islamophobic?
Stop. Who cares? What does it have to do with being Islamophobic? What does it have to do with being the Office of Management and Budget? Okay? It has to do with Vogt's faith. Keep going.
Absolutely not, Senator. I'm a Christian, and I believe in a Christian set of principles based on my faith. That post, as I stated in the questionnaire to this committee, was to defend my alma mater, Wheaton College, a Christian school that has a statement of faith that includes the centrality of Jesus Christ for salvation. And
again, I apologize. I do. Forgive me. We just don't have a lot of time.
Forgive me.
Do you believe that people in the Muslim religion stand condemned? Is that your view?
Again, Senator, I'm a Christian, and I wrote that piece.
Well, what does that say?
The statement of faith of Wheaton
College. I understand that. I don't know how many Muslims there are in America. I really don't know. Probably a couple of million. Are you suggesting that all of those people stand condemned? What about Jews? They stand condemned too?
Senator, I'm a Christian.
I understand you are a Christian, but this country is made up of people who are not just. I understand that Christianity is the majority religion, but there are other people who have different religions in this country and around the world. In your judgment, do you think that people who are not Christians are going to be condemned?
Thank you for probing on that question. As a Christian, I believe that all individuals are made in the image of God and are worthy of dignity and respect regardless of their religious beliefs.
Good answer.
I believe that, as a Christian, that's how I should treat all individuals.
And do you think your statement that you put into that publication, they do not know God because they've rejected Jesus Christ the Son and they stand condemned, do you think that's respectful of other religions?
Senator, I wrote a post based on being a Christian and attending a Christian school that has a statement of faith that speaks clearly with regard to the centrality of Jesus Christ in salvation.
I would simply say, Mr. Chairman, that this nominee is really not someone who is what this country is supposed to be about.
This is not someone who this country is supposed to be about. Bernie Sanders, you are not someone who this country is supposed to be about. You are a Marxist. You hate our founders. You hate capitalism. You hate freedom. You love power off the backs of capitalists so that you can rein us in to become your little subjects in your communist utopia that you wish to have. You are the most arrogant. I'm not going to say it. You think you can be the thought police? This Office of Management and Budget has absolutely nothing to do with what faith the guy has. And in addition, Sanders came out and said this. You think your statement condemns, is respectful of other religions. Bernie Sanders, or Vogt, said, this is how I should treat all individuals. Vogt defended himself pretty well. He should have asked the question, what does this have to do with the Office of Management and Budget, which he didn't think to ask that question. I'm sorry he didn't. It's tough to respond when you're being grilled like this. It's probably a little bit unexpected to be asked about your thoughts and your beliefs. because it has absolutely nothing to do. But Sanders actually has come out and said that he said, you think your statement that you put into the publication is respectful of other religions? Who asks those kinds of questions? Who asks those kinds of questions? My friends, this guy almost made it to the president of the United States, the office of president of the United States. He is full-blown Marxist and beyond. He is a poster child for those who supported him, that mass of individuals, mass of young people, who thought he was the answer to all their ills and all their wealth. And I emphasize this, my friends, because this is not going to stop. This is brazen. He says this is what this country, not someone who this country is supposed to be about. Wow, I would love to get him in a room with the founders. I know that's very dreamy, but get him in a room, you know, with even, you know, Senator Ted Cruz or myself. And the problem is you can't even argue with him. He's as dense as a brick. His brain is just a Marxist brick. He'll never listen. He'll never change his tune. He hates America. He hates the Judeo-Christian worldview. And if the guy who was being interviewed for the Office of Budget Management and Budget was a Muslim, oh, well, this would be welcomed with open arms. My friends, I point this out because this is not stopping. We have to keep talking. We have to keep exposing this for what it is. We cannot assume that these attacks are not going to hit us in our homes. And I don't just mean terrorist attacks. I mean attacks against our freedom of speech. The music's playing, and that's why I'm rushing, because I have so much more to say and I can't fit it all in. I hope that you have a wonderful week. I hope that this has been a profitable night for you, my listeners. This is Michelle Morin on AM 740 KVOR signing off. And again, have a wonderful week. We'll see you next Sunday at 9 p.m.